interrupt your program to bring you this important podcast. How to 911.
Can you put me out of service on a podcast, please?
Hi, welcome back, guys. This is Sammy with How to 911. I don't know why I introduced myself like that. That's not the norm. I'm Sammy.
I'm Erica.
And we have a special guest with us today. We're interviewing Greg Ward, who's with our Loveland Fire Rescue Authority. Greg, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I'm Greg Ward. I'm currently the Risk Reduction and Readiness Division Chief, which is new in the last 3 weeks. New division in the organization and a new assignment for me. But I've been here in with Loveland Fire for about 27 years and have 35 years, something like that in the fire service total. Probably the thing about me in the fire service that I hold most closely is I'm a third generation firefighter and fire chief officer. And my son is the fourth, and he started his fire service career within the last few years. So that's just something that's really special to me about our family. So
that's really cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for your service then for all those generations.
Our pleasure.
Oh man. Obviously the generational thing probably brought you to Loveland or like firefighting in general, but what else drew you to this particular agency?
I grew up in Berthoud, so not far away. And after high school, I went into the Air Force and was a firefighter in the Air Force and made a couple different stops, one in Kunsan, South Korea, and then 4 years down at the Air Force Academy working in the fire department there. And then as I was looking at options for getting out of the Air Force and Loveland's positions came open, I tested, and it happened to be at the same time that Loveland was going to open Fire Station 4 at the airport when that was staffed 24/7. And so I got hired for Station 4. There were 6 of us hired at once. 5 were Loveland Fire volunteers and then me. So I was the only outsider, and it worked out well because I had the experience with the aircraft and stuff coming from the Air Force to kind of help get that program running out there with Station 4 and the ARF stuff.
Yeah, that's a really good transition into a different kind of job set there with already knowing some little key things and then learning some new stuff. That's really cool. How long have you been with Loveland Fire then?
About 27 years now. So we got hired as engineers back then because all the firefighters were volunteers. So there was just a lieutenant or a captain and an engineer on each of the, would have been 4 engines at the time when I started. And so I got to be an engineer for a while, then a lieutenant, got rotated into the training division for a while as a lieutenant, and then promoted to battalion chief and went back to training for a while as a training battalion chief, and then promoted to operations chief, and then recently the rotation over to risk reduction and readiness. So got to do a lot of things in the organization.
That's fun. Can we go back really quickly to what ARF stands for, please?
Oh, sure, we could do that. It's aircraft rescue and firefighting.
Thank you. Okay. Since this is all not to me and Sammy. If it's new to me and Sammy, something is wrong. But for our listeners, knowing what our acronyms and jargon are.
Yeah, just catch me in some of that stuff. Because as I'm sure there is with dispatch, there's a lot of that stuff.
Definitely. Yes.
And it's crazy to think that when you started, there was only, you were just getting the 4th station. Definitely a lot of growth that's happening throughout the years.
Yeah, it's been a lot of change in the department, because we're at 8 companies now, going to be 9 companies when we open Station 10, plus our 2 volunteer stations. So it's been a lot of change. We've gone from mostly a volunteer organization in 1995 when I was hired to now mostly a fully paid organization, other than our 20 or so volunteers up in the Big Thompson Canyon. So yeah, lots of change, lots of growth.
With that change in growth, how do you think the relationship with Loveland Emergency Communications, like, has that gotten better throughout the years, especially with the growth and stuff that's been going on?
Yeah, I think the one thing that the Communication Center has done really well, probably over the last 15 years or so, is assigning somebody to be that liaison between fire and the dispatch center. And that completely changed the relationship between the two agencies, and having that direct tie to you guys. And it started out with Mark Gaisberg when I first had the role, and then Carmen, and now Rachel. And that's really solidified, I think, that relationship, because anytime we have any questions, any concerns, anything like that, we have one person to directly go to, and they just take care of it and handle it. And then it's also that tie that makes sure that we get to come up and visit with you guys on a somewhat regular basis. Right now, I know it's a little unusual because of COVID, but we get to visit with you. When I first started working here, dispatch was actually in the same building here at Fire Station 1 when the police department was here in the same building. And so we didn't have to have that liaison, because we could just walk upstairs whenever we wanted and have direct access to dispatch. But as dispatch moved to the police building and stuff, when that was completed, I think that getting that liaison set up was the best thing that dispatch did to really build that relationship.
Nice.
Yeah, it's definitely good to have that kind of relationship with our user agencies. I love it. Do you like your job? What's your favorite part about it?
I think that the best thing about my job is, and this may sound a little bit odd, but it's, I love to watch our people work. And it doesn't mean I don't work, but whether it's going to an incident and being on scene and watching our young firefighters and young officers, you know, making decisions and, you know, doing what they've been trained to do and taking care of that scene, or watching a lieutenant teach a class down at the training center. Or now in my role, I'm going to get more opportunities to watch our community safety division and how they interact with contractors and developers and stuff to make sure our buildings are safe. And we have some amazing people in our organization. And I think the best thing is being able to sit back and watch them work. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So what about your least favorite part about the job?
Ooh, that one's a little bit harder. You know, the easy answers are, in any place you work, there's always personnel issues and stuff like that you have to deal with. So those are always tough. But I think for us right now at LFRA, one of the things that we are struggling with is just having enough staff to do all of the other tasks that have to be done. We have accreditation similar to how you guys are accredited at dispatch. And you know, we have all kinds of things like that have to get done that we really don't have the staff right now to work on. And so I think that some of that stuff is probably the hardest thing about what we do as far as command staff right now is we have all these things we need to accomplish, want to accomplish, but we're just held back right now by not having enough support staff in our organization to accomplish some of those things, probably to the level where we want to have them accomplished. You know, most of the time we get them done, but
yeah, we definitely feel that.
Yeah.
That's a hard struggle right now with everything that's been going on the past few years. So if anybody's interested in a job, everywhere is hiring.
Dispatch and firefighting. Come on down.
Yeah.
I think the great thing on the firefighting side is we have a lot of candidates, a lot of people that test for us, and we've done a good job of trying to keep up with service levels and stuff on the station side and responding to calls and stuff, you know, the truly, really important thing. But our support side has suffered because of that, because of all the funding has gone mainly to those those areas. So, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, I just want to go back and say that I really love what you said that you love about your job. And I think that I wonder if that comes with, because I'm older than Sammy, I've been doing this a little bit longer. But like that comes with time and experience, like being able to celebrate the people that you supervise or the people that you work with, like seeing like what they can do and being like, yes, you're doing it. Where at one point you were the one doing that on the front line. Like, oh my gosh, this is so great. Or like in dispatch, like, oh my gosh, but wow, I was able to give CPR to someone and I helped as best as I could. And now for you to be able to see that that's what other people are doing and just to be able to celebrate their success and not feel like I want to be in that role. Maybe you still do, maybe, and you still are, but to see that and just be like, yes, do it. And that's what I like with Sammy and all the, like our new generation of people. I'm like, yeah, they're doing so good with that call or they dispatch those people so well. So I really like that perspective of what you like.
Yeah. And you're exactly right. I mean, the best job in the fire service, in my opinion, is driving the big red truck. that's the best job. I'd love to go back and do that, but that's not my role. So you're right. It's admiring the people that have come through the ranks and they're trained to do those things now, and just how good they are at what they do is amazing. And it is hard. The higher you go up in an organization and the more of that leadership stuff you learn and you gain along the way, you learn that there's more opportunities you have to give away. The longer you've been here and the higher up you go in the organization, then you get a take for yourself. And there's been times where I've had opportunities to go do something. I'm like, oh yeah, I really want to go do that. And then a few minutes later I go, I can't do that. I have to give that opportunity to somebody that's, you know, going to benefit more from it than I am, or the organization's going to benefit more by sending this person versus me. So you're right. It's good and bad that, sometimes you miss out on some of those opportunities now, but you really get to work or watch some great people do their thing out there. And it's pretty cool to see.
That's cool. I think that's definitely like a good trait of a leader and a teacher, being able to see when you're able or when you need to give up that opportunity and pass it on to someone else because you've had it before or you know that they could learn more from it.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes, but it's, I think it's one of those leadership traits. We do the leadership journey class. And I know some of the dispatchers several years ago went through that with Chief Murawski, and great class. But that's some of the leadership type lessons that come out of a class like that.
Right on. And I know, Sammy, I'm sure maybe later on, but at some point, Greg, will you talk more about what your new role is? Because it's a unique name and I may have already have to write it down because I forgot it already.
Yeah, I could do that whenever you guys would like. Do you want to roll with it now, yeah. Sammy?
Let's roll with it now because that was going to be my next question.
Oh, okay. Sorry, Sammy.
No, you're fine. It was just a perfect transition.
So in July, Chief Miller retired from LFRA. He'd been our chief for several years. And Chief Sarosky, who was our admin division chief, left the organization to go be a deputy chief in Washington State. And another division chief, Ned Sparks, announced that he was going to retire this month, actually earlier this month. So we had several significant people in the organization that have been here a long time leaving. And so we had an opportunity to do some reorganization. And when we hired our new fire chief, Tim Sindelbeck, he came in October and he took a couple months to evaluate the organization. And we started looking at now that we've gone from having three division chiefs to I was the only one left because of the retirements, what should we do with the organization? Is having three division chiefs still right or not? And so with a little bit of reorganization, we actually dropped to two division chiefs. And then we're going to add a third person down the road that's more of a business manager kind of position versus another chief. And so the two division chiefs, one of them, Chief Tim Smith, just got promoted. I think he's in week three now of his role as well. He took operations where I was at, and operations is oversees all of the crews that actually go out and run the calls and do the training and maintain the stations and the apparatus and all of that. And so then we created a new second division by moving some things around. So risk reduction and readiness, where I'm at now, it encompasses community safety. So our fire prevention activities, it encompasses training, and then a new section, which is logistics. So logistics is going to be our warehouse, our quartermaster, our bunker gear, turnout gear that we wear, equipment, fire engines and fire stations and that kind of thing. We've had all of our station crews being responsible for all those different programs in the past. And we're just getting so busy with calls and training that they're really struggling with ordering uniforms and ordering our turnout gear and some of that stuff. So we're going to pull some of that away and Captain Lyons is going to oversee our logistics section. And so he'll work on that. So risk reduction and readiness is community safety, which is the fire prevention activities, training, and logistics.
Awesome. Thank you. What is a quartermaster?
A quartermaster is uniforms, basically.
Okay.
I think that's a military term, quartermaster. But basically that team we have right now, Station 6, does it, and they order all of the uniforms and boots and that type of thing for our firefighters and staff.
Thank you.
So I know that operations oversees what the stations do. Does that mean that battalion also works the shift schedules that the firefighters do, or what is it the battalion's, I guess, schedule look like compared to the firefighters?
Yeah, so battalion chiefs, there's one battalion chief for each shift, and they work the same schedule as the shifts do. So they work 48 hours on and 96 hours off. So they're on that same schedule. Once you bump up above a battalion chief to the division chief level, Chief Smith works a 40-hour week. I work a 40-hour week, and the fire chief works a 40-hour week. We do have a couple other battalion chiefs, one in training, one in emergency management, and one that is our fire marshal, Carrie Dan, and they also work 40-hour weeks. So it's kind of a mixed bag with our battalion chiefs.
Yeah, I was wondering, because it seems like there's always one working, but wasn't sure why, but that makes sense that they work the same shifts.
and the battalion chiefs, just the supervision and leadership of the shifts, we need them to be there working that same shift as the firefighters. And then they're, as you guys know, as our incident commander for any big incidents. So we need them. We need one on duty 24/7. And hopefully soon we're going to have a second battalion. So we'll have two battalion chiefs on duty with each shift.
Wow.
We're working through that process now. It hasn't quite made the budget the last 2 to 3 years that we've presented it. We're searching for some grant opportunities and other things now to try and fund that, because our span of control with going to have 9 companies when we open Station 10 is starting to get a little out of whack there. And we need to have that second battalion fairly soon. So we'd have two battalion chiefs on duty every day with the shifts.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. When is Station 10 supposed to be open?
The schedule right now is August 9th. It'll be complete. Mm-hmm. So I would guess sometime in September, we would do a grand opening and open that station. And our plan is to move the engine at Fire Station 6. So engine 46 would move to that station, to Station 10. And then we have six new firefighters that start in the fall. And once they're trained and out of academy in December, a smaller two-person vehicle would go in service at Station 6 that would run the medical calls and service calls and that type of thing. And then they would team up with the tower for any significant incidents. So kind of changing up a little bit, trying to be efficient with sending a smaller vehicle to some of the medical calls and stuff that they run out on the east side of town, and then moving the full size engine to the new station. So it's going to look a little bit different when that opens, but probably September Station 10 will open. Then we'll have the new company in service right around the first of the year, I would imagine.
Nice. And Sammy, I'm going to jump in with another question unless it's on your list. Okay. It's a training question. What does do you have an academy? Officers go to post and then they come and learn here. What does your training program look like? Our Loveland Fire.
Yeah. So we hire people into the organization, but really their prerequisite is they need to have their EMT, Emergency Medical Technician Certificate, certification. And then from there, we basically take on the rest of their training. So we bring them in and we're part of a training consortium. Then there's 9 departments in Northern Colorado, from Boulder to Greeley to PFA and Fort Collins, that are all part of this training consortium. And we have 2 academies a year that consortium operates, one in spring and one in the fall. So we have to time our hiring to fit people into one of those 2 academies. And so we'll hire somebody and then we'll get them started with a couple weeks of pre-academy work. And then we won't see them for another 16 weeks. They go off to the consortium academy and get their basic firefighter training and certifications, and then come back to the departments that they're hired by. And then we go ahead and get them through a couple more weeks of LFRA specific training, and then they get assigned out to the companies. We rotate responsibility for the training cadre in that academy. So 2022 happens to be our year. So we've got a lieutenant that's going to be assigned to both of the 2022 academy cadre to be part of that. And then all of the departments have people that teach different topics and stuff throughout that 16 weeks. And we provide fire engines and stuff as needed. And they rotate to our training center for certain classes, and Greeley's training center and Boulder's training center and stuff to do this. So it's really a team effort to try and train a lot of the firefighters in Northern Colorado that way.
That's nice. Kind of team up to teach everyone. So then everyone in Northern Colorado kind of has the same philosophy on firefighting, right? So if we work with Windsor and Poudre, we're all doing the same thing and not trying to take over or do something different.
Yeah, for the most part, everybody trains off of the same curriculums. There's a few different things, like the hose is loaded a different way on our engines versus, you know, maybe Windsor's or Berthoud's or something, but they're smaller issues that we can, that's not going to impact us on scene. But just the general overall basic firefighting skills and knowledge and stuff is pretty much the same across the board. And it's a state certification that they obtain at the end and have to maintain. It has to be recertified every 3 years. So it's a pretty standard curriculum. And then the consortium adds to that curriculum that comes from the state and makes it better than what is presented at from the basic level.
Okay. And then continuing on with training, if that has to be every 3 years, does every company train every day? Or just once a shift?
Yeah, for the most part, our crews train a lot. When you ask people in other departments about LFRA, one of the things you'll probably hear is that LFRA is a training department. We do a lot of training. So in their 48-hour set, we call it, so they're on duty for that 48-hour block. They're training at least once generally in that block. Some of that comes from the training battalion that puts out training that they need to accomplish, or scheduled like bigger training like live fire and stuff that comes from the training battalion. Some of it comes from the battalion chief of that shift has training they need to accomplish, want to accomplish with their crews. And some of it is driven by the officers and the crews themselves, where they can go out and do things on their own and train. So it's a wide variety. We have to maintain our EMT training that has to be recertified. And we do some of that in-house, some of it with Thompson Valley EMS. We have to maintain our hazmat certifications and tech rescue certifications and dive rescue certifications. So the whole training program is geared around making sure we stay proficient at as much as we possibly can, and we're maintaining our certifications. And then we're always looking at new things that are out there, that new techniques in firefighting, new tactics, that kind of thing, and paying attention to those and making sure that we're evaluating those and are they right for us. And if they are, we need to train on them and implement them. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we went through a significant change in tactics and how we fight fires, and really just to, because the buildings have changed and the contents of buildings have changed so much over time, that we needed to bring our tactics up to meet what is really in the buildings today and how the buildings are built. And there's been a big push fire service wide over the last 10 years or so to do that. And so we've accomplished that, but we always have to keep an eye on what's next out there and make sure that we're at least evaluating those things as to whether they're right for us or not.
Awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I guess kind of to change pace here, with everything that you've said about the changes throughout the fire department, what have you seen throughout the years that dispatch does well, besides the liaison to help better relations, what do you like about our center, I guess?
Yeah, I the thing I like best about the Loveland Emergency Communications Center is that we get dispatched by you guys. And I say that because I'm well connected with the other fire departments in the area. And there's a lot of chief officers in those departments that if they had their wish would be that they could be dispatched by the Loveland Emergency Communications Center. So I think that's what I like best. I like hearing from our partner agencies going, and our dispatch doesn't do that for us. Our dispatch doesn't repeat that information. Our dispatch doesn't capture that information. So I think that's what you guys really do well. I think you do most everything that you do better than at least what I hear from our surrounding, you know, chief officers. So I appreciate that about our dispatch center.
Yeah, thank you. So what do you think that we could improve on for a center that we can pass along to our partners?
Yeah, I think that there's a few things, but I don't know that it's dispatcher centric. I think it's system centric, that we still have things to work on. There's always things that as we move forward as a team, right, fire and dispatch, that we need to look at is how can we get the calls processed even faster and out to the crews, right? How can we get the CAD system to do more for us? And we've talked in the past between fire and dispatch and a little bit with the IT for the city is we really need somebody that is a CAD administrator, somebody that knows that CAD inside and out and all the capabilities, and that you guys and us have access to help us make it better. Because right now the staff from the dispatch center that's helps with all the CAD things are awesome but they're self-taught, right? In most of that. And we don't have anybody that's their specialty. They can get into CAD and figure anything out. And so I think that's one thing as a team we've talked about in the past, and we start to make some ground a few times, and then it's just never really come through. And then I think the last one, and you guys already hit on it, right, is you guys are going through, hiring people and training people and having to hire people and train people. And there's always a gap there when you're training new people that, we hear a difference, we see a difference. And it's not anything that I don't think dispatch can change or do. It's just, that's just how it is with the dispatch center. And I think that's some of, your staffing issues and stuff that you guys are experiencing and having to, continually bring new people into the organization. So it's, and I don't believe that's just, Loveland Emergency Communication Center thing either. I hear that from the chiefs in our surrounding departments that, dispatch is having to hire a lot right now and trying to find the right people to sit in the, in those seats that you guys sit in. I don't know that people really appreciate how hard that is unless you spend time up there, and you have to have the right people to be able to do that. And I think it's hard to find.
Agreed. I like the point about the CAD, because it is, I feel like when we have something that's new, it's Supervisor Rachel / liaison doing it for us instead of someone whose job, that's her job right now, but we don't have a dedicated person to take on that role. And it would be really nice to take that off her plate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's so many things that we don't even tap into because we are trying to get the basics of it down really well. And we just don't have anybody that has that advanced level training to go, oh, hey, CAD can do that for us. Mm-hmm. Whether it's something to make it better for us or something to make it better for you guys. And so, having that person that's their role, and they understand the ins and outs of CAD would be awesome for us.
Yeah. Yep. So just to kind of round things up a little bit, what do you want the public to know about LFRA and firefighters in general, or like just anything you want to just throw out there that you think the public should know about us?
I think with LFRA and I think this is kind of universal with firefighters. I think that there's a lot of people see firefighters as that's their job, right? Being a firefighter and going to fires. And I think that a lot of people don't understand and that there's so much more behind that, and with the fire service and the hazmat response and the tech rescue and the EMS and all of that on the response side. And then there's so many things on the other side of the fire service that really isn't out there in the public much. And that's the training folks that are training our firefighters and getting them where they need to be in our community safety division that's reviewing all the building plans and making sure the buildings are safe and doing inspections. And so there's a lot of other pieces out there that all come together to make LFRA, what it is. There's some specialized things that does make LFRA pretty unique. One of them would be our relationship with the SWAT team, Loveland Police SWAT team. And we have a tactical fire team that's based out of Station 5 that responds with SWAT and assists SWAT with fire and hazmat and some rescue stuff that's really unique, and it's really not done across the country. Most fire departments are involved with the SWAT team do the paramedic, TIMS type response, or they do the active shooter, exercises that we go through. But ours takes it a step further and really provides extra training and knowledge to the SWAT team based on the fire, rescue, and hazmat side. and provides them some extra equipment that we carry that the SWAT doesn't have to carry because we carry it. So there's some unique things that we do here at LFRA. I think that's pretty special for our community, but you know, I think that most of our firefighters out on the street, people look at them as, oh, they go to fires. And as you guys know, there's so many more things behind the scenes that they do, and so many more different types of incidents that they respond to. So I think that's important. I think it's interesting to note that one of the calls, and you guys experience every one of these because you dispatch them. One of the calls that we go to a lot is a detector call. Somebody calls and somebody's having an issue with a smoke detector in their house, and they call you guys, and you dispatch an engine company out, and our firefighters go and take care of that, whether it's helping them with a battery, helping them troubleshoot a problem with the smoke detector, installing a new smoke detector for them. We get more compliments and kind letters and cards and stuff about that than we do anything else we do. Mm-hmm. And I think that just speaks to the, that is such a truly a minor incident that our firefighters respond to, but that commitment, compassion, and courage on the side of the engines that's on every one of our fire engine, it's our values, that compassion that our firefighters have when they go out and work with the public on something that's really pretty minor like that. We get so many compliments and kind letters and stuff about how nice our firefighters are and stuff. And so I think that's important. Those little type incidents, little interactions we have with the community are very important. And I think our firefighters do a really good job of taking advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
So on that that level of detectors, how do you have tips and tricks for homeowners or people that just like live in anything? I guess there's all kinds of structures that we can live in, but to, like, tips and tricks for fire prevention, because we always know those structure fire calls come in and they're going to come in regardless of somebody prevention or not. But what's a good way for them to try like really hard to not have that kind of serious thing happen to them?
Yeah, I think especially this time of year, I think our structure fire numbers climb in the winter time. And a lot of times it's space heaters and utilizing areas of the house that may not have effective heat from the furnace system. If your furnace goes out and you're using space heaters and space heaters in the garage and that kind of thing. So make sure when you're using the items like that with the space heaters that they're approved by the UL. They have the safety devices built in that if they get knocked over, they shut off. They have timers on them. And you keep them away from combustibles. My wife wouldn't like to hear this, but candles are a big one for making sure that we are using candles and putting those out when we leave and at night, and just being wise with how we use candles. Cooking fires are fairly common, and a lot of times with cooking fires, it's that situational awareness, right? We get distracted by something else happening in the house, or we got to go do something and we leave the pot of food on the stove, forget about it. We leave the house, or we go out in the backyard to chase the kids around, play with the kids or something. And then we have a fire on the stove, and so just making sure we have that situational awareness when we're cooking and don't walk away from that. And then I think one of the big things right now, obviously from the pulling in, you know, what we saw recently from the Marshall fire is in Cameron Peak and those things in those areas that's in our wildland urban interface, you know, the houses that are built in the forests and then the open spaces and stuff, is just making sure we're doing a good job with some mitigation around our structures and make sure we trim the trees back and we mow the grass and the weeds and, you know, keeping the clutter down from underneath the decks and that type of thing. You know, I think the Marshall Fire, from what I've seen and heard, you know, that the wind just played such a huge, you know, impact and factor into that fire that mitigation probably wouldn't have helped a whole lot there. That was just too overwhelming with that wind. But in our normal wildland fires and grass fires and stuff we get here in Loveland that are burning close to structures, that mitigation is going to make a difference, barring a huge wind effect like that.
Yeah. Erica, do you have anything else?
No, I jumped in at all the inappropriate times to ask my questions already.
No, it was totally appropriate. Whatever. Greg, is there anything else that you want to say before we get finished up here?
I think from LFRA to the two of you and all the dispatchers that we really appreciate what you guys do and the level of commitment that you guys have to providing good service and to the citizens, of course, but you guys are committed to the safety of our firefighters, and I think that's important. And people don't always realize the role that the dispatchers play in doing the best we can to keep our firefighters safe. So thank you and the staff at Loveland Emergency Communications.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Well, I guess that we're going to go ahead and wrap this up then. Thanks again, Greg, for meeting with us. I appreciate it. Everybody, hopefully you know where to listen to us by now. If not, you can find us on all platforms. You can find our Instagram at How To 911 Podcast. And then also our Facebook is Loveland Emergency Communication Center. If you have any questions for us or any questions for Greg, you can email us at howto911cityofloveland.org. There's that. And then as always, guys, know where you are, know your phone number, and tell us exactly what happened.